Hello. This is Inna Duckworth. I'm a fertility naturopath and the host of Ready to Conceive podcast. I'm absolutely ecstatic. And you know when I am because I'm all lit up. A couple of weeks ago, I was Googling some aspects of fertility, and there were loads of fertility books, how to improve that, how to improve that, how to improve that. But they were all targeting the patients or the clients. And I was like, God, there's so much science there. Has anyone actually gathered it together for people like me, the professionals, and that we can have like a one place where you can go, like a little Bible where you can go and read the things about what you need? And ta-da! There was this book, Enhancing Fertility Through Functional Medicine. I couldn't believe my eyes. I literally couldn't believe my eyes. And I find out it's just been published, hot off the press, by wonderful Jacqueline Downs. And then I reached out, and there we are. This is Jacqueline in front of me, looking very, very sort of opposite to her book. And I'm handing over to you. Thank you for coming to this podcast.
So thank you so much.
Can you tell us a few words about yourself and how did you come about writing the book? And I've got loads of questions.
Okay, well, first, thank you so much for your enthusiasm and your interest in having me on. I'm thrilled to be here and talk about my book. The book actually took me a couple years to write, quite a few years. It actually started with a talk that I gave for my local hospital for the nursing grand rounds for their CEUs. And it was MTHFR is a gateway gene. And so it was just focusing on MTHFR because everybody, which for people that may not know, it's a genetic variant that involves your ability to metabolize folic acid. And it's a very, very common genetic variant. And so I gave this talk, it was very well received. So then I wanted to turn it into just like a little lecture or something that I could have online. But my previous career was in birth work. So I'm a certified doula. I apprenticed for 5 years with a very renowned home birth midwife, working with the Amish community. She teaches at Midwifery Today conferences all over the world on all kinds of things like breech and shoulder dystocia and stuff like that. And I also am a prenatal postpartum yoga instructor, and I did a course, a training on placenta encapsulation. So this was my life. My previous career was in birth work. And I decided to take that MTHFR course and curtail it to fertility. And then it's just sort of like, well, why don't I turn this into a book? And so I just started writing with all the information that I had as a functional nutritionist. But it was a lot of cutting edge information that many, many people didn't know. There's a lot of really awesome practitioners that are still on the anemia train where, you know, knowing your genetics can really tell if it's a true anemia issue versus anemia, iron getting stuck in the wrong places. So just slowly, I was just writing a chapter on this topic and a chapter on that topic, and it just sort of all came together. And then I was just blessed enough to have Taylor and Francis pick it up, which is an academic publisher. And so that was just really surreal. And so the book is here, and I'm just thrilled to be getting the word out about it because I don't have a super large following. I've been working in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, primarily with a lot of plain people. And so I don't need internet and social media and all that stuff. So I kind of forced myself to get on social media. And so I have a little bit of a following. And so it's not like the world knows about this book. So it really touched my heart that you read the book and you loved it and you wanted me to come on.
Yeah, well, I am still reading it because it's a really, really dense book, you know. But I also like what that you said, that it's not only so initially that it was for practitioners, but it's also actually I find that it's structured for the clients as well, for fertility clients. Maybe not for everyone, but there is a type of client that really wants to know what is going on with them, and they really want to be sure that they want to hold their fertility in their hands. You know, they don't want to just rely on somebody telling them take this, They mm-hmm. want to have this own validation, like how it works for them. And yes, the book is structured amazingly well in terms of it's got 12 chapters, almost like it kind of corresponds in a sense with the way I think of them, like, okay, we have to check out this, we have to check out this, we have to check out this. And also I like the nerdy appendices for people like me. And, you know, it's absolutely, absolutely amazing. But we probably will refer to book a bit more, but I would like to kind of get a bit to for you to talk about, why do you think it's necessary to prepare for conception? You know, I loved one statement. I just wanted to bring it to context. I printed it so that that not getting pregnant might be a part of protective mechanism in primarily perceived dangerous situation. And I know that your first degree is in psychology, and then you did functional medicine training, and then you did genomics training. So it kind of all ties together in a very unique and beautiful way, in the sense, just let me just finish. When you said that, it's like when they say, oh, the ancestors were running away from saber-toothed tiger, and it's this is all here, your nutrigenomics, the nutrition, and the psychology is all one in one go. So could you please tell us, why do you think it's necessary to prepare for conception?
Sure. Yeah, I did want to piggyback on one point that you made about the book. So just the bottom line is, like, I did write the book for the motivated layperson that is really wanting to educate themselves beyond what they're getting from their caregiver. But also I wanted to write the book for practitioners. So it's like this weird Venn diagram, or right in the middle. And so I placed all of the biochemical, technical, genetic information in the appendices so that practitioners can use it as a handbook. And really the book, while it is curtailed towards the fertility community, it really could be used for any issue, because it's looking at underlying causes or root causes, lesser known but very common root causes of inflammation and oxidative stress. So really this could be for so many more things, because chronic inflammation is at the heart of all of our modern day ailments, it seems.
Yes, again, this running away, but I'd like to say that when people come to see, for example, me or my colleagues or people like you, they have already looked at most obvious causes. Mm-hmm. You already get, nobody is, like when you say, oh, take some vitamin D or take some omega-3s or take something that, people are not surprised. They already read about it on the internet. They're already taken that. So knowing these less known causes and understanding them, I think, is crucial. And I think that's the book.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you. Okay, and so to answer your question about why it's necessary to prepare for conception, and my statement about how not getting pregnant might be a part of a protective mechanism in a primally perceived dangerous situation, I'd like to provide some background context for that. So preparing for conception will help to enhance chances for successful conception and for sustaining a pregnancy, but also creating a really robust baby that's able to meet its full mental and physical potential. So the two most important physical aspects of preparing for conception, in my opinion, are the repletion of nutrients. So, you know, not having deficiencies or insufficiencies, and the removal of toxins from the body. So first, the repletion of nutrients, because you can't pour from an empty cup. And I literally state those words in my book, especially in the first trimester when all you want to eat is crackers and bread, right? So you'll have the nutrient reserves to pass on to that baby, because nutrients are what drive all the biochemical reactions in the body. They are literally the fuel for every single process to take place. So that is why I'm a very big proponent about eating nourishing, nutrient-dense foods. And then the second is the toxic burden that our bodies experience in this modern industrial age is nowhere close to what our bodies were designed to handle. There are literally toxins everywhere, and many of them bioaccumulate, which means that they get stored or they build up in our bodies faster than our bodies can clear them out. So study after study show that these toxins are absolutely passed in utero and through breast milk. And these toxins affect our hormones and fertility, our nervous system, our organs, our immune system, our brains, and especially fetal development. The baby is just a tiny little container. And so that's a bucket that can get filled very, very quickly. So we pass our lifetime of toxin exposure to our babies, and then they will have a lifetime of toxin exposures to pass to their babies should they be lucky enough to get and stay pregnant. So nutrient deficiencies and toxins, along with a lot of other types of stressors, which I talk about in my book, they put the body in this state of fight or flight rather than the rest, digest, repair, reproduce state. And those are two branches of what's called your autonomic nervous system. And so I make this statement in my book about how not getting pregnant might be part of a protective mechanism in a primally perceived dangerous situation. I dig into this fact by discussing how our bodies have this inherent programming to be able to sense when it's not a safe or optimal time to procreate. So if we don't have enough energy for our own daily lives, the body sure is going to know that there's not going to be enough energy to grow a human, which is a very energy intensive process. And it doesn't want to make mistakes. And our bodies know that if there was danger, that it's not a safe time to procreate either. And so I know it knows that our bodies may need that energy to fight or flight a dangerous or trying situation. And our bodies, our modern day bodies, still perceive stress in the same way that they did eons ago, even if our stressors have completely changed, right? I don't know very many people that have had to run for their lives because a predator was chasing them, thankfully. But the stress of modern day events elicits the same biochemical responses in our bodies as a dangerous predator. You know, the cortisol kicks in and the blood goes to the extremities so we can run. So it's not wanting to digest our food. You know, it's getting away from the danger. So the difference between the past stressors and the modern stressors today is that they're constant and chronic these days. Before, you would get away from the danger and then you would come back to homeostasis and a regular state, but these stressors are just chronic. So toxins, nutrient insufficiencies on top of our everyday mental and emotional stressors cause what is called oxidative stress to the body, which causes inflammation. Oxidative stress negatively affects the cells and the tissues and the systems. It damages the cellular structure, but it also damages the information that the cell contains. And then that puts the body in a stressed state.
That's exactly how it feels, you know, that the chronicity of that and the like replacement of this, that we even don't understand that this is a stress for your body. You know, when I was doing my research for my dissertation and I was writing on ADHD in children, and they were saying that just being in the office, like, okay, that would be for a pregnant woman, but still just being in the office is already a competitive environment where you have to deliver. And that already puts your body into a stress situation. And that leads to further cascade of changes that might translate into the ADHD in offsprings. So that's exactly how we need to educate people that this is already a stress. This is chronic stress. This is what you need to understand. And I'd like to move to my second question. So if we have more time, we'll chat about everything else. You actually put inflammation in the core of the workup, if you like. And I just like, can you just tell us a bit more, because that's the book about, but can you tell us about more like the how you think about inflammation and how would a normal person just understand that they have actually got a problem, you know, because sometimes when people come to us, we reveal the big reveal, oh, you've got mold. And they're like, no, I don't want to know about that. Or you've got Lyme's or what else, you know, and they say, no, I don't want it. Just don't tell me, like, can I unlearn, please, you know? So can you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. The body has so many checks and balances and it will rob Peter to pay Paul in every aspect. So a lot of times we are not aware of the inflammation because it takes a lot for it to actually manifest a lot. Like same thing with bone density. You know, your body is constantly taking these minerals from the bones, but then, you know, it's not until the problem is there that it's going to show up on a test. But really anything that ends in itis means inflammation. Anything that feels hot, swollen, red, hurts is inflammation, which inflammation gets a bad rap, but it is inherently a good thing because our bodies create inflammation to deal with a stressor, which could be an injury, it could be an allergen, it could be a lot of different types of things. But it's when the inflammation becomes chronic and low grade, that's where the problem lies. And then there are things that cause our immune system to get easily triggered, and then that just becomes a vicious cycle.
And then how would a normal person know that they've got an inflammation? Would like themselves, what would be?
That would be especially pain presentation or swelling. Also just the energy. It'll take your energy from your daily life to try and it uses a lot of energy to, like I said, shuffle things around and rob Peter to pay Paul. And so just kind of not having the energy that you feel that you should can be an indicator that there's some sort of inflammation going on.
Yeah, that makes sense, because the energy we are supposed to have for life, you know, not for, you know, fighting the, like something's happening there. Okay, so you have done so much in understanding nutrigenomics. And obviously this is a big part of what you do today. So say there's a lot of argument that when people come to see a functional medicine practitioner of any kind, there's a lot of testing involved. Okay, we say this, you need to test this, you need to test that. And now we say, we need to do nutrigenomic testing. Okay, so can you just advocate a little bit, what can go wrong if individual genomic profile is disregarded? So we didn't do the test, we don't know what's going on with you. What can go wrong? What are we missing if we don't do that?
Okay, yeah. So I'll give a quick little background that epigenetics is the study of how your unique DNA blueprint interacts with the environment it's exposed to. These environmental factors include things like diet, toxins, stress levels, trauma, sleep, exercise, just the air that you're breathing, the water you're drinking. And the field of nutrigenomics is epigenetics with a focus on how nutrients and lack of can affect genetic expression. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever use the genes as a diagnostic tool. It provides a framework for where there might be the cause of the imbalance. And then we can do some testing to verify. So even though one genetic test, fit test, is all you need, whereas, you know, functional medicine testing, you want to get a baseline, then you want to do a follow-up, then you want to do a further follow-up. So it's really a very good deal because it's going to provide you with lifelong information, because your genes show how you're programmed to produce nutrients or substances, transport them, absorb them, metabolize everything from hormones to neurotransmitters and antioxidants. And this is why everyone needs different amounts and forms of certain nutrients. For example, some people don't convert beta carotene into retinol, which is the form of vitamin A that our body uses. They might have genetic variants there that hinder that conversion. And so relying on a supplement that only contains beta carotene could cause elevations in beta carotene, but you're not actually getting the retinol that the body needs. Others don't convert folic acid into methylfolate. Some don't recycle glutathione effectively, which is your master antioxidant. So without knowing your genetics, you can waste a lot of time and money trying different protocols. So if you have your genes interpreted by a trained professional, that can really eliminate all of that wasted time and for our clients, heartache for sure. It also is going to help you to streamline your efforts to increase your health far beyond your current symptom or issue or fertility challenge. So when I say genetic testing interpretation, I'm not talking about blood testing for specific genes like MTHFR. I do not agree with only testing for isolated genes, because everything works together. Unless, of course, you're doing a specific genetic mutation test for like Tay-Sachs or sickle cell or something like that. But the general salivary testing that's widely available to the public, like 23andMe, which I actually am I allowed to say that I don't really recommend using those big mega corporate testing companies? And the reason why is because the reason why they're so inexpensive is because they're giving you the information you want, but really they're making their money selling your information to third parties, and who knows what they're doing with that. So I no longer recommend that. But a spit sample can reveal an incredible amount of information about your body and therefore your fertility, but only if the testing comes with interpretation by a live human that's been trained. I've had so many clients say, oh, I've done this test and this test and this company, can you help me make sense of it? And so a lot of that is just causing analysis paralysis because they're presented with all these different reports and then they're not having somebody say, this is what it means. This actually, a lot of those tests have contradictory information. And I have a quick little video about it on my website about, you know, why you want a live human that has been trained to interpret your genetics. But here's the big thing. This is the main reason why. Just because you have a genetic variant does not mean it is expressing.
Yeah.
So an effective genetic interpretation requires knowledge of your health history, diet, stressors, toxin exposures, all of which let us know how your past and present lifestyle and diet have impacted your genetic expression today. So genetic variants can contradict or complement each other, like I said, because there's genes that are upstream and genes that are downstream. So I already mentioned the beta carotene converting gene, but there are similar genes for choline, for iron, and knowing where your genetic weaknesses are in antioxidant production, which is essential for egg health, and your detoxification pathways, which we talked about a little bit ago. So knowing your genetic info can help to provide you with targeted support and know what is going to work and be the most effective for your body. So therefore you're not wasting time and money. And like I said, heartache.
Yes, yes, yes. And I completely agree with you with both points. Like in the UK, we have got several companies that offer the genetic testing, which is not validated. It's part of their legal process that they do not sell your data elsewhere, which I think is important. At least you should know. If you're okay with your data being used elsewhere, that's fine. But if not, then you should at least have a choice what is happening with your data. And the other thing is absolutely the interpretation and the expression as well. And also, as you say, like when you know something is expressed, you will offer a different protocol, if you like, a different support structure, or you can at least explain under which circumstances this gene can be expressed further. And yeah, that's absolutely amazing. So what is your favorite chapter in your book? What do you really like about your book?
There's a few chapters, topics that I could talk about all day long. I really think oxalates, which is actually becoming more of a recognized topic in at least, you know, nutritional functional medicine circles, but oxalates are vilified by a lot of people. And I clearly state, like, I don't want to steer people away from eating really, really healthy foods. But if you've had mold exposure, if you've had a lot of antibiotics, if you have poor fat utilization issues, which I have a whole chapter on that, then you might want to consider testing to see if oxalates are an issue, because you could be eating these really, really healthy foods like everybody on their green spinach smoothie kicks. And you might actually be causing more inflammation than you're aware of. So the oxalates, histamine, I think histamine is an issue for so many people. And so I definitely could talk about that one. And I think that one's a really, really important one too, because a lot of people say, well, I don't have hay fever, I don't have itchy eyes, runny nose, but there's actually a really great, if you just do a internet search for histamine intolerance chart, there's a couple really good ones. One of them looks like when you were in elementary school and you were like planning on writing a story, there's like histamine in the center, and then there's all the lines with all the different circles, but it shows you like the bottom left quadrant of that is your typical hay fever symptoms, right? Itchy eyes, runny nose, bronchial constriction, maybe some skin irritation, hives. But what most people are not aware of is that it can affect your hormones, because estrogen and histamine feed each other. It can affect your circadian rhythm. It can affect your digestion. It can affect your vertigo and headaches. And so like a lot of this stuff people might not even realize is a histamine response, even though they're not having your traditional hay fever symptoms.
And also I'd say that like a lot of work I do in vaginal microbiome, if I hear word itching, the first like part of the, as part of the part of the workup, I'm checking what else can be there, what else is happening, because so often that the itch is the cause as well. What's your take on mold?
I was just going to say that mold stimulates the mast cells to release histamine. So if you have crazy histamine issues, you might want to go further up and investigate if mold is an issue. Now, mold can be an issue for you whether or not you're currently living in a moldy situation, like whether you're working in a moldy office building or living somewhere. It can have happened decades ago in your college dorm or a house you grew up in, and your body essentially became that moldy environment because mold came into your body. And then mold elicits these gases called mycotoxins in order to protect itself, protect its territory. And so your body essentially can have those molds kicking out those mycotoxins, and it's just colonized and you're like your own moldy house. And so that can definitely cause a lot of histamine issues. But as I state in the chapter, there's just so many things that you might not realize that could be caused by mold. So I am a big fan of mycotoxin testing. That's one that I run on almost everybody, and almost every single client that I have run a mycotoxin test on has had, nobody's had like none, right? But some are they're not very harmful. They're pretty benign, whereas others are very, very damaging to your cells and your systems and your fertility and your liver and your kidneys and all of that. So you really want to know what you're working with, so that, as I say in my book, you know how to target the excretion with precision. You can't just take one thing and like all the mold's going to get out of your body.
Exactly. And the other thing, I'm very grateful for that, this point that you're testing almost everyone on that, because it's sometimes hard for people to realize that actually we need to test. We can't just ignore that. We can't just pretend that we might have something or might not. In your experience, I'd like just to sort of, for the audience, in your experience, how long does it take to sort of, for fertility reasons, how long does it take to sort of clear a mold if this is in moderate situation, not the worst one and not the easiest one, sort of moderate, how long does it take to clear?
Well, that would depend on how sensitive you are to protocols. There's some people that just can't handle very much and they have to go, you know, very, very tiny fairy dust amounts. Mm-hmm. So that really is a hard question to answer. But I would say, if I had to just sort of throw, you know, one number out there, I would probably say, well, this would be two numbers, like 4 to 6 months, ideally. Which, you know, any functional fertility practitioner would tell you that even without mold on the table, 3 to 6 months is, you know, the ideal. Well, three is the very, 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 very minimal, but 6 months would be more ideal preconception to get your body optimized. And so mold can take, I mean, it can take 2 to 3 years in some severe cases.
Well, thank you for saying that, because this is exactly what I am conveying. I think that there's more and more practitioners who, like you and I, are actually telling people the actual stories in terms of 3 months. If you're healthy, 3 months for your egg to mature, for your sperm to mature. We're just clearing some, like, you know, you staying up late, not having your crisps, not having a glass of wine, you name it. Just a little bit, no sandwiches, maybe a bit more, some kind of more nourishing food. And having a nice breakfast, like full of proteins, not the cereal or whatever. So if you are in this state, 3 months, yes. But people don't come when they're in this state. They come with, I have had that amount of pregnancy losses, or we have not been able to conceive. And here in the UK, by the way, we've got one chance of having an IVF round for free on the state.
Wow.
In the US, the situation is different, but and people are not explained that for you to have success on this one round, which for some people is a lifeline, because otherwise prices on everything else, we know them, but they need to be explained that you have to do the work up for this to be successful. You really have to. So, and then when we say that mold can take up to 2-3 years, if somebody's been really ill, really unwell, that is true, people. This is true. This is just, and there's no way, unlikely, you will be successful in your pregnancy if you still carry high amounts of mold, because they're just incompatible with fertility. I don't know what's your take on mold, but I always think of mold as viruses need host to live in, bacteria need host to live in. Mold doesn't care. Mold is something that turns your leaves into the mulch for next year. So they don't need a host, you know. They live in us, they live in a house, they live elsewhere. So that is why it is so, like, incompatible with life, if you like, in that context. So I'm on my high horse.
Yeah, well, here's the caveat, though, is that should a woman get pregnant and stay pregnant and, you know, have a live birth, those mycotoxins absolutely pass on to her child. And that could be one reason why childhood allergies have just increased exponentially, and skin issues and mood disorders, you know, just behavior problems, because mold affects the brain and the amygdala and, like, so many parts of the body that you might not ever make that association. So it is good to spend more time and money preparing your body than your baby's nursery, I have to say. A lot of I state that in my book.
Yeah, exactly. Because the other thing is, we do not discuss a lot, but say, okay, mold is a very different story, but very often the solution is to test for, it's slightly there, but the solution is, let's test for your natural killer cells and put you on immunosuppressants and put you on steroids during your first 12 weeks of pregnancy, and it will sort itself out. Well, what will sort itself out exactly? You know, which is the reason for these natural killer cells are elevated, you know, and let's, so if we're suppressing your immune system, what kind of long-term processes are we suppressing? That's one thing. And the other thing is, there's this body of research coming that the children who were born from mothers experiencing long-term steroid therapy, they have got cleft palate. Yes, we can rectify it. That's fine. Okay, we can rectify everything. But what else is not working? You know, what else? Because it's a cleft palate is a partially methylation issue. I'm coming to very back to the beginning of the of this conversation, because this is where the DNA, the red cell replication order has been, or cell replication instruction has been interfered with, and mm-hmm. that's what is the outcome, you know. So again,
yeah, another factor. I do think that there is a trend. Hopefully, we are turning the tide, where you're saying, like, it's, rather than just say, oh, your natural killer cells are high, let's, you know, let's lower them. Same thing with hormones. Your hormones are out of range. Well, let's just force them into the range. But really, those things are the messengers. Those are the flags saying, hey, there's something that needs to be addressed, because the body is so inherently smart. Like, it knows, and it has these little ways of telling us. And, you know, especially, like, for my husband, I have to, like, say nutritional things in car analogies. And so it's like, you could have a squeaky wheel, right? And you're gonna get to where you're going quite a few times, but really, like, that's telling you that something needs to be addressed. And the longer you wait, the more it's going to be an issue.
Yeah. Even if something is, like, you know, a car analogy, if something, the brakes are wearing off, the longer you allow for the brakes to wear off, then you can actually get into the situation where they might not just work on one day. And do you want to be in that situation? I don't, you know. So
yeah,
and wind it back. Yeah.
I state in my book about how so many people, their check engine light is on, and they're just either covering it with some tape, or they're pulling the bulb out, and they're not exploring what that message is coming from.
I think there is another kind of aspect why that is, because people don't know that there are people like you there out there who can help them. So could you tell us a bit how people can work with you and what they can expect working with you, just a little bit, and which kind of areas globally do you cover with your work?
Okay, so as far as fertility goes, I have a meticulously detailed intake form. And so your initial consultation, which I call like a full audit, is mostly me just asking you questions about your answers so that I can get more input. And then based on what answers you've provided to me and your symptoms and your previous diagnoses and your diet and all that, I'll say, okay, well, these are about the top three or so things that I think could be the primary source of what is going on. And so it would be a good idea to address those, whether we test them or just, you know, can move forward with that. Now I also offer genomic interpretation, and I really, really love it for my fertility clients, but I also have clients that are, you know, 70-year-old men, you know, so anybody can benefit from enhancing from genomic interpretation to enhance their health or whatever situation they are. And so that is a separate, they pair nicely together, but I offer the one-to-one consultations and I offer the genomic interpretation package, which comes with a typed, it can be anywhere from 25 to 45 pages on your particular genomic profile. And then I make a video where I show you the software, show you what I'm seeing, and then I sort of walk through your typed up report so that it's very personalized. And I have received tremendous feedback. This is something I just enrolled out within the past year, probably within even the past 6 months or so. And I have, I think, a lot of 5-star reviews on the information I provided.
If it's as good as this.
It really, if you have the book, it really helps everything to come together, because those chapters, there are corresponding genes and genetic pathways that I show you in the software. So you can actually see what your profile is and understand more deeply. Now I do have some background explanations and a lot of action steps like I do in my book, but my book just goes way, way further into detail.
That's amazing. One question about the working with fertility. Do you work with men as well?
I do.
How often do you say, where is the second person participating in the fertility process? Because we've got a lot of discussion about it in the UK, where sometimes the male fertility hasn't been discussed widely, and many IVF clinics and other consultants say, oh, he's all right, we'll just deal with him. And where we, on our side, we are saying, no, bring the male. So what's your take on that?
So I'm happy to have the partner sit in on the consultations to hear, or I also have separate consultations, one with the male, one with the female, depending on how much support the male wants. But I do mention, like, hey, this would also be a really good support for your partner, because it's going to help enhance the sperm health, and it's a benefit to your cells, and sperm are often the first thing that either takes the hit or gets the benefit. And so go ahead.
I love it that the first thing that gets the hit gets the benefit.
Yes. Yeah. So whatever capacity that they want to be involved in, I fully support. Now, if they've, usually I just say, well, hey, this might be a good idea for both of you to take, especially just your general foundational supplements. If the husband has had, you know, the semen analysis and everything looks fine, and you know, he checked all the boxes, then it's just, if he wants to join in, great, you know, but there are some things that both of you can be doing. And especially if there's any dietary changes that need to be made or upgrades, it is great to have the partner on board so that it's not just like she's on her own journey.
Yeah, well, exactly. There's two sides for me. That one is she's not on her own journey. That's the game for two. Mm-hmm. And the offspring is similarly affected by male genetic expressions as female, and the other thing is the impact of male fertility as well. Just well, thank you very much. I think we can talk more. Anything else you'd like to say before we part today?
No, I really could nerd out with you all day long, and I would love to have another conversation with you.
Well, I'm sure I would love to invite you again. Maybe I'll ask the audience if they've got any questions. If there's a body of questions, I'll come back to you with questions.
Okay, yeah, I would love to do a Q&A. That'd be great. Yeah,
that would be amazing. Oh, we could do a Q&A in Instagram Live, so it's kind of feeding everyone straight away rather than a formal kind of podcast. Well, I'm stopping recording. Thank you very much to dear audience. Please comment. Please leave your questions. We'll pass them on to Jacqueline. Or just keep, you know, get in touch with Jacqueline. All your social media handles will be in the episode details. Thank you very much.
Thank you.